So I think let's start the session, right? So basically today I would be talking on in-house support, how to build in-house support for any open source, and we would be very specifically talking about Cassandra here, but the sections would be quite relevant for other open source technologies also. Then I will be just explaining what we learned using a case study of a product-based company who is working on Cassandra and wants to build its own open source support system within the organization. So these two sections are pretty much useful if you are having plans to build your own in-house support for open source technologies, right? Many companies do that. Then I will be coming to challenges. In challenges, I will explain what are our biggest challenges. I have experience of 3 to 4 years working in big data support. So what challenges we faced and how we have addressed them till now. Then I will go deep into the Cassandra, very specific about the Cassandra, so don't get lost because you need some knowledge of Cassandra there, right? So I will be talking about the best practices in operations which are required, and then I will be talking about very specific Cassandra issues which we faced in production, and at high level I will explain how we fix them, right? So let's start. So when you think of building your in-house support system for Cassandra, many questions come to your mind. You are very apprehensive about how you will do that, right? So these are some of the questions, like it's a huge code database. Will I be able to manage it? Will I be able to support it on my own? Should I go for external vendor support instead of just doing it myself? Do we have the right skills? Do we have enough skills to just support all the issues which come in production, right? What if we are stuck? What if we are not able to solve any problem? What will happen? So all those apprehensions and all those questions come to your mind when you just think of building your own in-house support rather than going for an external vendor support. So we will see we will answer this question later at the end of the session, that how it is feasible to build or what are the challenges you can expect in production, right? So let's start with building in-house support. What all things you need to build in-house support for Cassandra, or be it any open source, right? Like, just like any activity you begin, any big thing you begin, you need to have a very crisp vision, your very, very specific vision and purpose for that activity. Same thing happens with starting your own in-house support system for Cassandra. So you need to define what is your exact purpose of having your in-house support rather than going for an external support. Is it just faster and predictable turnaround time of issues, production issues? Or you are more interested in cost effectiveness achieved by having your own support system? Or as a secondary objective, you also want to do things in open source and contribute back to the community rather than just focusing on your things, taking from the community, right? So you need to be very clear on your vision. Once the vision is defined, you need to define what is the scope of your things you would be doing. Will you be offering 24/7 on-call support? Or will you be providing customized Cassandra patches? You will be working on the code and providing hot fixes on short-term basis, right? Will you be providing consultancy to your application or product teams? And will you be contributing other than your usual work, like new features and fixing Jira defects, things like that? So you need to be very clear on defining the scope of activities you will be doing, and you need to be clear, yeah, this is not out of, this is out of scope and this is in scope, right? Now this is one of the most important aspects of having your own in-house support system, because no matter how good people you have, you need to work on competence building. You need to have the right skills in place so that your support team can be effective in production. So if I'm building Cassandra support, obviously Cassandra operations, maintenance, all those things are very obvious. And then you need to have good programming skills, because ultimately you would be providing hot fixes on your patches, right? So you need to have good programmers in your team. You need to have good troubleshooting people who are very familiar with the tools and who have good problem solving skills. And last but not the least, you need to have a team which is aware of the product you are supporting. Because if your team is in isolation and it doesn't have any product specific knowledge, then your turnaround time will be higher, just like external vendor support. So it will defeat the entire purpose of having your own in-house support. Next, you need to prepare a roadmap, how you would go about the competence building of your team to fill the gaps which are there in the competency building, right? So theory, just learning theory via documentations and trainings won't work here. You need to have hands-on experience if you want to support Cassandra in production. So you need to decide that whether your team will be working on the product issues so that you get the hands-on experience, or community issues and new features, and how you would be doing POCs to evaluate new features of Cassandra, right? Once competence building is done, another important aspect is having the real infrastructure for floating your hot fixes on a short notice, right? So here we should have a country CI setup, like which all your support teams can use to push patches, and then you should have R&D labs and knowledge sharing tools like wiki, mailing list, forums, so that your teams can share knowledge effectively. So that's what you need to build your own in-house support, right? So let's understand with a small case study. So we have a product-based company here, which was using RDBMS till now in many products, right? In three of its products, it has recently decided to move to Cassandra for cost cutting and achieving high scalability and fault tolerance, availability, things like that, right? So now organization wants to cut its expenditure and licensing costs, which was common with RDBMS support, right? So we can have a support system for the organization where you have three different teams, A, B, and C. These teams involve designers, support teams, so I have just drawn each team with a different color circle, right? And then you have a complete, the bigger circle representing the in-house support team. Here, one very important aspect of building a support system is having sub-teams which are closely related to the product teams. Because if you just have a single support team working in silo and not connected to any of the product teams, as I said, your turnaround time will go up. So it is better if you have few people aligned with each product from your big core team, so that they have product awareness, how Cassandra is used, what is the database design of your application or product, right? So in this model we have, and these small teams collaborate using all the tools, knowledge sharing tools, blogs, wikis, forums, and this is real. We have a similar system here with companies. So, and this tool promotes reuse. So if I have fixed one issue with Cassandra 2.1, another team just can reuse the fix I did. If I backported something from 3.0, then another team can use that, right? So you will save lot of testing effort, lot of integration effort. Things which are done can be reused easily. You can have your own internal Cassandra releases, right? If I have fixed 10 fixes, right, in Cassandra, and I have released an internal build, other teams can just readily use it. So it's a lot of effectiveness and cost cutting. Then once you are fixing things, you can contribute those things to community, because it's never one way. You need to give back to community. And then you can have your R&D team which will work on common solutions, like scheduling a repair in Cassandra. Right? If I need to run a repair, I need an effective scheduling for repairs, right? And another team also needs that. So you can R&D team can work on a collaborative, work on a common solution which is useful for all the teams across an organization. So now, till now we have seen how we can have our own build, we can have our own in-house support team. Now let's move to challenges. So nothing comes easy, so you need to be aware of the challenges which are there when you have your own in-house support team, because it's never an easy job to have your own in-house support team. So these are the biggest challenges we have faced at Ericsson till now. So this is real experience, it is not taken from anywhere. So it is what we have observed at Ericsson, right? Keeping pace with Cassandra releases. So open source is growing at good pace. You find every day new features are coming up. And then sometimes when you have hundreds of deployments all over the world, you need to push a new release to all your customers. It becomes really hard for you to push those releases to all the deployments. So if maybe the latest is 3.11, we are still on 2.1, right? And all our customers are not on that thing also. So you need to be aware of that. It is not easy to push those things to all your customers. Support for EOL versions. If you are not staying up to date with technology, up to date with releases, soon your releases will start becoming end of life. And when this happens, you can expect minimal community support, because the plain answer you will get from community is on most things that you need to upgrade your Cassandra and then test whether the problem is reproducible on that thing or not, that version or not. Your version is not yet supported. So you are on your own. The time your thing goes EOL, you are on your own for fixing everything. And you have insufficient and outdated documentation. So we have observed this with Cassandra. Recently, Cassandra documentation has been improving, but we have seen scenarios where documentation is incomplete, open source documentation is outdated, it is never updated, and in fact that becomes more misleading. So the ultimate thing you need to do when you need to study something, you need to drill down to the code and then find out what is actual state of this particular feature, how it is built, rather than just relying on the documents which are floating all over the internet and are never updated. Lengthy upgrades. So actually we have a telecom company, we hardly get 4 to 6 hours of daily maintenance window. And if you have any experience with upgrading Cassandra, especially the major versions, you won't find it easy to complete that within 4 to 6 hours. So it may take 10 to 20 hours, 30 hours, depending on the data you have. So it's really challenging for us to convince our customers, like, why such a lengthy upgrade? Customers are not used to these things. Then we have compaction strategies. Cassandra uses compaction for just consolidating data and making sure that data fragments are converged to single place in single file so that reads are efficient. So, but these compaction strategies may surprise you. After running 6 months in production, you may realize that your tombstones are not getting evicted. So, So you need to be very cautious with that. Just doing short cycles of testing won't help here. You need to carefully analyze the data pattern of your customer, its habits, how data is impacted, and then you need to decide which compaction strategy will serve your use case for most of the customers. After so many years of NoSQL, this is still there. The problem is still there. You find it hard to convince your customers what is NoSQL, NoSQL, right? So concepts like repair, why to need repair? Is something broken? And how it got broken? So these small innocent questions come from your customers, and you need to just tell them that, you are working with some RDBMS, I'm aware, these concepts are not there. But in Cassandra, you need to have these concepts. And because repairs are mandatory thing in Cassandra, you can't just, it is hard to keep them transparent and or hide them behind some functionality, because customer has to be aware of these concepts, because then only he would be aware about the criticality of doing repair, why it is so important. So this is another good question we often get. How deleting data can increase disk space? Can you explain me that? You are saying that my disk space is getting full. It is at 90%. I want to delete data, and you're stopping me to delete data. Why? How can deletion lead to increase in my disk space and worsen the issue? So, and then I have say 20 node cluster. I don't understand what is replication vector in Cassandra, right? You are saying that my replication vector is 3. I can just afford a single node failure. I bought 20 nodes from you. I should be fine with 10 nodes with less load. Why my application starts breaking when second node goes down? So these are very honest questions which you need to answer your customers. And it's really tough job to explain your customers these concepts, because these are technical things, and sometimes you have non-technical people at customer end also who need to understand why the disk is getting full, why you want us to stop purging the data, right? So how Ericsson address these challenges? So this is our experience of what we have learned till now, right? In our product team. Basically, we have a Cassandra team dealing with a particular product. So this is our learnings, right? So stability over fancy features. So features will keep on coming, right? But don't burn your fingers by just upgrading too early. Because we have seen real bad things happening. If you move quickly to incremental repair, when it was introduced and when it was stabilized, there was a long period, right? You need to make sure that you go slow and steady, because if you want your product team, your support team to sleep at nights, you need to be making sure that you have stable builds in production. You have so many hundreds of deployments. You can't afford to choose features over stability. So go build safe. You need to proactively plan your upgrades. You can't just plan upgrades on ad hoc basis. You need to be in sync with what your open source is doing. If Cassandra 2.1 is getting end of life in November 2016, I need to plan in Jan. I will be floating this version, and I will making sure that by November all my customers are upgraded to next version, right? So you need to be very careful, otherwise you will it will be harder for you, I would say, because sometimes you need quick answers and you need to dig in detail, but you will find that you have less time, so you need some kind of support. This may happen, right? Even if it's 1% of the case, that may still happen, right? Where you need community support, and it is as per our experience, it is generally harder to find community support when you have an end-of-life release. You need to test your compaction strategies very well. You need to have protection like systems which have similar data patterns, and those systems must be running for months before you say stabilize on a compaction strategy which is suitable for you. So you need to be cautious when you select compaction strategies. If you are moving to something new, thoroughly test it before just seeing the short-term results. For making your life easy so that you get less support calls related to basic NoSQL concepts and operational procedures, you need to make sure that your documentation is very clear on that, very detailed documentation. That may sound unnecessary for your technical staff, but that may be very helpful for your support staff and for customers. Be updated. Just don't rely on all the documentation which is there for open source. You can never trust a documentation because all of us are volunteers working on open source. Some document may be outdated. Some latest thing is there in your release, but you are not aware of that. So if you need to avoid blunders, you need to be on your toes, very active on the mailing list. What is happening around me? What Jiras are getting fixed? And if you are interested in some fixes, when those fixes are coming? So all those things will help. So now we have the answer. Yes, we can have our own support, in-house support. But there are certain challenges and we need to be cautious while having our in-house support. If you have 100 Java products and your teams are handling them, why can't you handle Cassandra support? Cassandra is plain Java application, right? So you need to be a bit confident. You need to be confident when you are going for in-house support. Like, man, this is just a Java application, right? If we can support complex Java applications, we have 100 applications and we don't need any support to manage our own applications. We are the experts which provide support for that. Why can't we just support Cassandra or some other NoSQL database? So now we will go a bit deeper into the Cassandra operations best practices. Daily maintenance. So this is important for any database, but it's also important for Cassandra. You need to have your daily backups. You need to have clearing of snapshots. In Cassandra, backup is taken through a concept called snapshot. So the good and the bad thing about snapshot is when you immediately take a snapshot, right, it shows that it is not taking any disk space because they are just links. But over time, as compactions happen and old files started getting deleted, Cassandra is unable to delete them. Then your snapshots will be taking substantial space on production servers. So you need to be very careful because we get so many calls every day, like our disk is getting full, we are getting disk alarms, please do something. And the first thing we say is that, have you scheduled your clearing snapshot job? So make these things automated so that you don't get unnecessary stuff. These are easily avoidable issues in production. Repair each data only once. No point doing full repairs. So you need to repair, if I have three replicas in Cassandra, 1, 2, and 3, if I've repaired one data once, it means all three are in sync. I need not go to second node and then again repair the data. I would be wasting precious IO. So this is, so you need to go for either PR, primary range repair, or sub range repair, which is offered by many tools for automating repairs. And you need to use incremental repairs also. Incremental repairs are newer than earlier it used to be PR. And now we use incremental repair so that a data is repaired only once. What are the critical things you are expected to monitor in a live system? Repair status is the number one thing, because it can, if repair is not properly completed within GC grace period, it may lead to data integrity issues. So this is the most serious thing you need to monitor in production. You need to make sure that you have enough checks in your system that ensures that your repairs are not failing. So whether you do it by alarms or other checks, you need to make sure that your repairs are done properly. Drop notations. So in Cassandra, everything is not synchronous. Like there are 5 replicas, suppose, in my Cassandra cluster. All need not be updated. I may just update 3 synchronously and 2 asynchronously. But those asynchronous writes may not ever complete, right? Due to maybe a system overload or network fluctuation or any other reason. So you can have a state where out of 5 replicas, only 3 are to latest technology, which was latest version, which was updated by your application, and 2 are still having obsolete data. This won't impact you immediately, but you need to keep an eye on this. Why it is happening in your system? Are your servers getting overloaded? Are you observing network fluctuations? Because in the long run, you may have bigger underlying problems. All time blocked. So no tool TP starts is a wonderful command provided by Cassandra, which allows you to see at a glance what all things are getting blocked. So you need to keep an eye on that. Am I getting all time blocked? Maybe my flush writers are getting blocked. So this is the bottleneck which is getting created here. You need to benchmark your read and write latencies, and then you need to make sure that your system stay close to that. You don't deviate too much. You need to GC pauses is the most common issue you will get in production. We had so many tickets for this thing. Every other day you tune the GC, and then some unique data pattern emerges and some customer again reports it. Hey man, you said GC pauses are fixed, now I'm getting this. So you need to be very good with GC tuning, especially when you are on CMS. So because we still have 2.0 and 2.1 in production, so we still use mem tables which are on heap and create lot of heap pressure. Disk usage. So as I told you, disk usage can be because of simple reasons like customer not clearing the snapshot. Snapshots are getting created every day, but no one is cleaning them up, or the cleanup job failed. So eventually your disk is getting at 80% or so, right? And disk alarms are coming. So you need to keep a check on disk also. Upgrade SS tables. When you are going to upgrade to a major Cassandra version, right? You will run upgrade SS tables, which is a long running job. You need to make sure that all your tables get successfully migrated. If you don't do that, nothing bad will happen, only your performance will get hit. So you need to keep a check on that also. Automate anything and everything you can, because if you want to make your life easy, you want to minimize all those human errors in long procedures. Like setting up a multi-DC with customer. You have a geo-redundant setup, one site has to be set up here, one site there, and then these things must be automated so that things are smoother in production. Scaling up is a very common scenario, and downsizing the cluster. Then you have upgrades, where upgrade SS table has to be run, things have to be done, like no tool drain, entire procedure has to be executed. You need to make sure that maximum things are optimized and automated. Backup restoration is standard. Then we have clearing snapshots and repairs. So we have observed with so many of our customers that they don't properly schedule repairs. So if these things are automated, right, you are able to just you will cut down on the maintenance your system needs, because in RDBMS customer was not having a repair system, right? So he is not aware and he is not sensitive to those kind of issues. So you need to make sure that you have automated repair scheduling. For security, Cassandra offers various encryption options, even though they are getting better and better every day. But at least you have a reasonable encryption system in place. So for security reasons, you need to make sure that you use encryption, especially in a multi-DC setup. You must be using GMX for monitoring your cluster, or maybe some tool is using GMX internally. So you need to make sure that you use SSL. Coming on to issues, specific issues we usually get in production. And this is the joy of fixing production issues. After every emergency, when it gets fixed, you can see the joy on face of everyone who was involved. GC pauses, as I told you. Big problem with Cassandra, especially with 2.0 and 2.1 releases, where off heap mem tables, if you are not using off heap mem tables, then mem tables will always create pressure on the heap. Moreover, there are compactions which are continuously happening in the background. So you need to make sure that your heap is properly tuned, JVM is properly tuned, and your Cassandra configurations are in place, so that you don't get pauses which halt your application. So how we fixed it? We fixed it with faster memtable flushing. In Cassandra, before going to the disk, everything is in memtable. So we just tuned memtable flushing to make it a bit aggressive. So for that, we had to give some IO, right? But GC pause was more important for us at that point of time. We are using SSDs. Some higher IO would do, but GC pause are not acceptable in our application. Higher GC pauses beyond a limit. Then we tuned STCS. We were using STCS, size tier compaction strategy, which is the default strategy provided by Cassandra. And we got excellent results doing that. Everyone is saying that LCS is better and is good in so many things, and tombstone eviction is better, and there are scenarios which are suited for LCS over STCS. But you can do so much good with just making STCS a bit more aggressive. You are anyways doing high IO with LCS. So just give it a try and try to tune your size tiered compaction strategy itself. We have seen that we have issues with the production systems where SS tables are not getting compacted. They are not getting touched, involved in the compaction for months. So how your deleted data will eventually go out? How your deleted data will eventually be evicted from the system? You will keep on hanging on to things. Your tombstones will not let you, will not allow you to release disk space. So what we did, we just reduced minimum threshold required for compaction. So default is 4, we went with 2. So if I have two similar sized SS table files, data files of Cassandra, I will merge them. I won't wait for 4 files. Another property which can help make compactions aggressive is bucket high. When I say that in STCS, similar SS tables need to be clubbed together. But what is the definition of similarity? Is a SS table of size 10 MV similar with an SS table of size, say, 15 MV? Or is it similar with size 13 MV? So you can tune these properties so that even if there is bigger gap between the SS tables, they get compacted together. Then there are very good options available in Cassandra, like single SS table compaction. You need not wait for even a single table to participate in compaction. Every table can compact on its own. Then we need to do GC tuning. We need to make sure we were observing heap fragmentation in Cassandra. Due to heap fragmentation, we were having concurrent mode failures and promotion failures, which is a standard problem in with CMS and other things also, other algorithms also. But then we just made sure that we start GC early. So don't wait for old gen to be occupied till 70% to trigger a GC. Make it 30%. Give enough room for old gen to afford the heap fragmentation. So we did some tuning, and with combination of all these three things, we are effectively managing GCs at acceptable level, without switching to LCS and without, say, doing Cassandra upgrade. Then in multi-DC setups, we got a ticket where customer reported that repairs are getting hung. So suddenly, yes, a repair is hung and it is not making any progress. So this was happening for days, like repairs were getting hung, and then we realized that it's a simple problem. Firewall is just timing out the connection between both the DCs. So you need to be aware of these small things which can just be easily skipped, right? If you are not aware of them. So we just tuned our TCP keep alive settings on all the nodes and made sure that our connections are not prematurely closed by the firewall. Slow table scans. In our product, we had several use cases where we need to scan the entire database and print the report. Take my words, Cassandra is not meant to do that. You need to look for other technologies. Using Cassandra for doing full table scan is not a good use case of Cassandra. So we learned the harder way. We just tried to do that, and then we were getting report in 8 hours, 9 hours. And then we did some multi-threading. We tried to simulate Spark in a code by having multiple threads working parallelly on the different token ranges Cassandra is having, just to make sure that things happen in parallel. We achieved some performance. We went to 5 hours. But customer was still unhappy. Why report? He is not aware about full table scans, which technology is using. He will say that I used to get this report with X database in 20 minutes. You are taking 5 hours, come on. And you are giving me a better system, a next gen big data system. So you need to make sure that you use right technologies. Eventually we move to Spark and the same 8 hour report is being fetched in 10-15 minutes. Another very important aspect is we overlook production settings which are recommended for software like Cassandra initially. But then we address individual problems and then we realize, oh, I missed this production setting. This was recommended somewhere, I never realized this was so important. And now after getting the ticket, I'm realizing that, yeah, man, this should have been done. This is one of the recommendations. You need to be very careful about all the recommended settings for production systems. Some of the very difficult to fix problems were identifying Linux settings which impacted Cassandra. So Linux has some optimization when they use THP and transparent huge pages and zone reclaim. So these things were creating ad hoc problems. Suddenly your system is running and then everything goes down. Sometimes Cassandra dies, sometimes CPU spikes happen, and you have no clue what is happening behind the scene. So then eventually we realize that there are some settings which are not at all recommended for Cassandra. You need to make sure that your THP and ozone reclaim are disabled. Similarly, our Cassandra was getting down due to out of memory error. And on going deeper, we realized that Cassandra uses memory mapping for files, for database files. And there comes a time when your database files grow. So if you have 50,000 database files on your disk and you don't have appropriate setting of mmap, you may just make Cassandra shut down itself automatically with OM. So you need to make sure that you have right settings. Be very careful when you are going into production and make sure that you evaluate each and every production setting and take a cautious call that if I don't want to go with this setting, what is the reasoning I'm giving myself? Another problem is, like, we always used to listen that Cassandra can support 2 billion columns per row. Yeah, it's true, but the thing is, it is not a practical thing. If you put so much data in a single partition, single row, you will get many kind of problems like slow compactions, hotspots, things like that. So we have built our own dynamic bucketing system where we use metadata. We keep metadata about how much data is there for a particular partition key. Suppose at starting we have 10 buckets. So for today's date, 16th May 2017, I need to put data. If I put it in a single row key, the node responsible for this particular partition key will be the bottleneck for all the writes. So I need to divide it in buckets, make sure that I put data in each bucket, and each bucket, because it uses underlying hashing, will get eventually divided and your entire cluster will get used.
Do you have any consistency problems with that?
Sorry?
Do you have any consistency problems? As, let's say you update, you know, a value but it spans multiple buckets.
No, we don't have any consistency issues because we have a metadata table which we read before. I have all the data with me that this row is having buckets 1 to 100. Another row key which is not having enough data is just 720 buckets, not the 100 buckets. So we have exactly record of what is there and how many buckets are there, and we don't face any consistency issues. So we create, say, 10 buckets to start with, and then we just, as and when needed, as more data, as we keep track of data which is getting pushed for a row key in metadata table. So if 10 MB is the limit I want to keep a row restricted till 10 MB only, I will make sure that when these 10 buckets have 10 MB of data, I just create 10 new buckets, and now all my clients are parallelly writing to these 10 buckets instead of the old ones. So simple solutions can create very big things, right? So this way we solved our hotspot problem, and we handled the use case where each row was having an unpredictable amount of data. Some rows may be having some 100 MBs of data, another may be having much more data. Okay. So I'm just winding it up. So this is the last slide. So disk crisis. So sometimes this is one of the most interesting escalations which happened, right? So disk crisis. We recovered system from nearly 100% disk space. Imagine your production is running at, say, 99% disk, systems can fail anytime, right? So we recovered system for there. Sometimes, and when we, you don't have enough disk to do anything. Just very little disk was left. And just we, then some out of the box thinking by some of my colleagues worked out, right? We moved some data, we asked customer to stop everything. We moved some data out of the Cassandra disk to create some room for compactions. We compacted the tables which were remaining, which were serving the critical live traffic, right? And then we moved back the data from the backup disk again to the data disk. So sometimes standard solutions just don't work, and you need to go for such innovative ways of bringing back the system up. In the long term, we fix the problem with aggressive compactions, and we are also evaluating LCS. Thank you. So we have 4 minutes for questions.
Two questions.
Yeah.
One, you talk about the upgrade nightmares. I come from HP's world, so different viewpoint. Does it support moving upgrade or anything? And you have to go from a 100 user to the next piece?
Yes. So your question is, does it support rolling upgrade, right? Yes, Cassandra supports rolling upgrade, so you can do that with zero downtime. So you can upgrade one node at a time.
Okay. The problem is that it's only for one person. If you are, for example, two top fellow, and there is 2.1 and 3.0, you have first go to 2.1 and then 3.0.
Yeah,
that's how it works, Cassandra.
So while upgrade is happening, you have some constraints that you can't run repair, and you need to be constrained in doing schema changes. You can't do that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, till your entire cluster is updated, but you can do that. Rolling upgrade is a possibility with zero downtime.
Thank you. Second question was on the security side. You talked about SSL for JMX and also some other component, but. If Cassandra is ran on a, let's say, multi-tenant mode, where you have 100 customers on a single installation of Cassandra, does it support a standardized way of authentication for multi-tenant?
See, I don't have any experience with that, but yes, within a cluster, if your data centers, all your data centers come in one cluster, right?
Right.
So you can secure the communication between those data centers using encryption. So basically the idea is to prevent man-in-the-middle attacks, but still there are some improvements which are required, like hostname verification is missing now in node-to-node encryption. So when those things are, the main target is to prevent man-in-the-middle attacks.
Yeah, going to your question,
any other question? So I think we can conclude. Thank you.